Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, welcome. My first guest today is one of my all-time favorites. He does some amazing work, and he'll be a stranger not to many of you, but most of you will know who he is. I'll introduce him in just one moment. But if you've been feeling less than energetic lately, you might blame it on juggling long work hours, raising kids, and running a home. Conventional wisdom says, look, slow down, get more rest, eat more healthfully, and head to the gym. But according to Dr. Deborah Green, there's much more to feeling energized. She says that other energies have a strong effect on our well-being, and we need to examine all four energy bodies. And that's what we'll be doing coming up at 12:30 today. First, I'm delighted to welcome back to our show someone who, as I said, needs almost no introduction, Dr. Bernie Siegel, or Bernie, as he prefers to be called. He's been talking to patients about empowerment and the choice to live fully and die peacefully since 1978. He's devoted his life to humanizing medical care and medical education. Dr. Bernie Siegel, welcome.
Hi, thank you very much, Vicki.
Pleasure to have you back. And to my account, you've written 11 books now, maybe more than that, but that's what I found, 11 books. And
yes.
In your first book, Love, Medicine, and Miracles, you explored the effect that the mind can have in fighting illness. And many people wondered what happened to the patients who followed your advice. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about today.
All right.
You've written a new book to answer some of those questions called Faith, Hope, and Healing.
Right.
And I wonder if you'd just take a couple of minutes to describe that book to us and tell us how it came about.
Well, the subtitle tells it. It's Inspiring Lessons Learned from People Living with Cancer. And what the book includes are the stories by the people, you know, what they've learned from their experience with cancer. And then after each one, I have to say, I do open the book, you know, with like a foreword and an epilogue at the end to share my experiences too. So there's a lot of places where I'm just talking. But after each story is a reflection. And I reflect about what is the wisdom, what is the lesson that's in this experience. I'm always popping the book open. Like one is entitled Bernie's Reflection. We are all works in progress.
Aren't we?
And, yeah. Excuse me a minute.
Bless you.
This season has me. But the reason I brought that up is because a woman, literally after developing cancer, wrote a poem about seeing herself as a work in progress. And I happen to also be an artist. And the last line is, the canvas is not finished, there's more color on the palette. And I try to get across to people that this is, you know, like training. It's like going out for a team or rehearsing for a play. That if you make a mistake, you're corrected and you learn and you don't do it again. So it's a work in progress. Just as you would touch up a painting rather than throw it in the garbage if it didn't look, you know, like the portrait that you were trying to, you say, okay, what am I missing?
Mm-hmm.
And so if we see ourselves as that work in progress, and as I say, the other thing I love about the word reflection, more and more, I'm really seeing water as an incredible symbol, as well as the place it has in almost every religion and so many myths that, for me, first of all, water, you know, liquid, solid, vapor. So if you were water, you could overcome anything. And then reading yesterday where some people are thrilled with rain, you know, it saves their crop,
mm-hmm.
and others are mad as hell because they have dry hay out in the field or, you know, there's a flood. And so, yes, we can be destructive with water and we can be healing with it, all in the same shape and form.
Yeah, very true.
But the thing that really struck me from the ugly duckling on up, how do you see yourself in water? The water has to be calm and still, and you have to be. And I think that's an important lesson from water. If you want to see your reflection, if you want to know who you are, then be still, be quiet, go within and know who you are.
Now, your title, the title of your book, Faith, Hope, and Healing, Inspiring right. Lessons Learned from People Living with Cancer. People often use the words cure and healing interchangeably. I wonder if you'd give me your definition of healing.
It's totally different. I mean, I get a lot of emails from people saying, you know, you talk about healing even though you can't cure people. And I often cite people like Helen Keller. I mean, here's somebody who's blind and deaf, but that's a healed human being, you know. Or a quadriplegic who is a mouth painter, you know, that they're not just sitting there complaining. So for me, the curing is physical. It's about, you know, what is wrong? Can we fix it?
Right, right.
That doesn't mean you'll be happy when it's fixed, but at least it's a physical change. You know, it's like taking your car to be repaired. Okay, you drive away, it's working. Mm. But to me, the healing is about finding peace. It's healing your life so you begin to enjoy the experience of life. Now, I also add that when you, because this is what really woke me up 30 years ago, I started support groups for people to help them, because this was a request from a patient. I need to know how to live between office visits. So I was trying to help them live. And I noticed, incidentally, when you help them live, they lived longer. Some of them got over incurable diseases and are still walking around.
And you're talking live, you know, as in enjoy life rather than just survive through between chemotherapy
treatments.
It's
finding your authentic self. That's why, again, I get into the term being born again. And I don't say that in some spiritual religious sense, but it's creating the person you want to be. Mm. So if you grow up without love, with criticism, with rejection, indifference, abuse, you're in trouble. And then suddenly somebody tells you you have 2 months to live, and you say, well, then let me live what I want to live. Let me do what makes me happy. And that's not selfishness. It's just what feels right for me instead of pleasing everybody else my whole life.
Yeah.
And then, boom, off you go. Because it's then physiologic. In other words, your feelings are your chemistry. You're depressed. You're living in fear. Your body chemistry is very different than somebody who is experiencing love and happiness. And mm-hmm. studies are revealing this, that people who feel lonely are more likely to develop all kinds of serious illnesses because it affects the genes that control immune function. And cancer patients who laugh live longer. So you see that it's not putting on an act, in a sense. It's changing you, and then something begins to happen in your body. Another sentence that I love is, our body loves us. That comes out of a poem by John Updike, where he talks about the scab being a beautiful thing, because it just shows us that healing is built into us. But that sentence, our body loves us, that really hit me, because our body loves us, but if we don't love our life, think about Monday morning. More heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses.
Yeah, well, let me ask you a question, Bernie, because I want to try and reconcile some of the philosophies that you're talking about and some that you share in the book that seem contradictory or maybe incongruent with what we typically are taught about fighting disease.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look at, I studied British lit. If you look at British lit or any kind of literature over the centuries, there's much has been written about death and imminent death, and it's always fighting. You know, one poem that springs to mind is Dylan Thomas's Rage Against the Dying Night. You say, make peace with your cancer. Make peace with cancer. Tell us how we can do that.
See, I want you to love your body, not get mad at it because it gave you a disease. I don't want you to love the cancer. But you see, when you create a war, when you fight a battle, you empower your enemy, because now the focus is on your enemy and not on yourself. You know, it's how do I kill my enemy?
Mm-hmm.
But if your life is miserable and killing the enemy just adds to your work, then it's less likely you're going to recover. And Mother Teresa put it in a few words very well. she was invited to an anti-war rally, and she said, "I'm not coming." But she said, as the people turned to leave, who had invited her, "But if you ever have a peace rally, call me." And that's why what I'm trying to get across to people, don't just focus. I mean, think of what's going on in the world today, you know, in terms of war. When you just focus on your enemy, but if you said, how can we make peace with our enemy, you know, and create a peaceful life and relationship? And I don't mean you want to say, okay, I'll let the cancer alone. But you see, I know people who are conscientious objectors due to their religion who refuse chemotherapy because the doctor said, "I'm going to kill your cancer." And he said, "I don't kill anything," and walked out. Mm-hmm. And he drew pictures carrying his cancer cells away because he doesn't want to hurt anything. So I talk about eliminating your illness, not killing it. You know, because all the headlines in the paper, so-and-so loses his battle, meaning he died. Yeah. It's not a lost battle. We're all going to die someday. But it's how did you live your life that's important to me.
Absolutely. And let's talk about some of the stories in the book. We're talking to in this segment with Dr. Bernie Siegel. He's devoted his life to humanizing medical care and education. And we're talking about some of the inspiring stories and lessons of cancer patients who've helped or been helped on their journey by Bernie's work, Dr. Bernie's work. His new book is called Faith, Hope, and Healing. And you share a story. You know, many people, when they're first diagnosed, go through the why me agony.
Right.
And you share a story in the book of a woman who asked that question many, many times, why me, why me? And suddenly a little voice appeared in her head and said, why not?
Right.
So how do we, you know, what's the lesson we learned from that, why not?
Well, I even go further. Instead of why me, I say try me, because that comes out of one of the Psalms, examine me, O Lord, and try me. So when people grow up with love, they're not afraid of being seen as a failure, you know, taking on a challenge, becoming responsible participant. But, you know, the why me is really more from the guilt, shame, and blame that we grow up with. And when you can say, why not, it's, hey, it's me, it's life, you know. We all have to experience difficulty, not unfairness, difficulties, because we're all going through problems and all wounded. So again, it's looking at life, and if you're brought up with what I call models to live by, in other words, if you had parents, teachers, and clergy who taught you about difficulties and their God's redirections, you have a very different view when something comes along. Then it becomes literally blessing, wake-up call, new beginning, versus people who, when I say, how would you describe your experience, disaster, failure, roadblock. You know, all the draining, burden, all these words that are just wearing them out. And again, I think it comes from the authorities in our life as to how we confront problems and handle them and our attitude towards them.
Yeah, you say, you know, we it's true, we do make our own weather by focusing on sunny or cloudy skies. That's one of your reflections.
Right.
As a doctor, you say that science and modern technologies are not helping our society. Elaborate on that for us.
Well, what I mean is, I call it medical education instead of medical information. That you can go and be trained to be a doctor, but if all you learn about is technology, you forget we're taking care of people. I mean, a veterinarian said it well when I said to him, I think maybe I'll become a veterinarian because, you know, the pain of caring for people is just getting to me. He said, don't. People bring the pets in.
Mm-hmm.
So what we forget is that people come in their body. Yes, they're the ones that have a disease. And we need to treat the people and their experience. And that's why I say if you've got a true medical education, you would not just, well, this is an ad from a quality medical journal from one of the pharmaceutical companies. It said, I was depressed, unable to cope. I went to see my physician. I said, you've got to help me. He prescribed an antidepressant. See, and then it goes on to say how wonderful the antidepressants are. But I wrote them and said, look, if my family's killed in a plane crash and I'm depressed and I go to my doctor, he doesn't even say, or she, what happened? Why are you depressed? What's going on in your life? I just get a piece of paper and go fill the prescription. And they cancel the ad. So that's why, yes, I think technology is wonderful. I mean, operating on people is much simpler. There are people alive today because of organ transplants. you know. So I'm not against the technology, but you still have to care for the person. Because if you say to two people, draw yourself in the operating room, one can draw hell and the other can draw heaven, or the medication or radiation or anything else. So you want to know what is right for them, not just, you know, here, this is your prescription, but allow the person to participate and question the prescription or refuse it or discuss it with you, but at least to work out their way of being healed and help them on that path.
You know, for people who are in hospital, one doctor I interviewed, I thought, gave some great advice on that. And following on this vein about humanizing yourself, he said, don't just be a patient. Get rid of the hospital gown, wear your own PJs.
Yes.
Put a photograph of your family on the bedside table so that when the doctor comes in, you're not just, you know, patient number 32 or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he must have heard me talk.
He probably did.
I'm always telling people, put your baby picture in the room. So when they go in and say, oh, what an adorable kid, you say, yeah, it's me. But you see, that's why I say become a character in the hospital so that they know you as a person. And just like the doctor said, they don't walk up to the nurse, you know, nurse's station and say, give me room 222. Give me the gallbladder chart. No. You know, they walk up and say, hey, give me grandma's chart. Grandma's driving everybody nuts, so they know who grandma is, you know?
Yeah, well, I told my mother that when she went into hospital, and she said, oh, you don't have to worry about that. The nurses and the doctors stop by to see me for a joke every day, because she knows a lot of jokes.
Yeah, see, those simple things. I mean, you could bring in a dozen roses and put it on the nurse's desk when you go to the hospital, and they'll remember you, you know, the patient who gave us the roses, you know, so you're somebody special. Or you have a joke for them every day when they make rounds so they feel a little better, or give them a hug. My mother drove all her doctors crazy, hugging everybody. you know, she would say, that's what my son said.
Right.
But, you know, she became very special to them. And they let me know it, you know, that they got a kick out of my mother. And she did very well with all kinds of affliction. I would often forget that she had many things because she was busy living.
Let's talk about fear, Bernie. You know, most of us have experienced what we call those dark nights of the soul. And when you have a serious illness, I can't imagine what it must be like waking up at 3 a.m. and you feel so alone and lost. And, you know, things seem always much worse at night than they do when the sun's shining and the birds are tweeting in the morning. So,
well, first of all, I say to people, part of survival personality is that you ask for help from friends and family if you're lonely or troubled. So don't lie there in bed at night saying, oh, I don't want to bother anybody. It's okay to make a call or to ask somebody to stay over. And they can say no. See, they have the same rights you have. So if they don't want to do it, they can say, no, I can't. But don't be afraid to ask. That's survival behavior. But fear, you see, fear is built into us to protect us. I was riding my bike the other day, thought I saw a coyote on the path. It was in a wooded area. I whipped the bike around so quickly.
And pedaled like Lance Armstrong, right?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. And then I could feel my brain saying, no, that's not a coyote. That's a broken branch with a shadow that confused you. And so I turned back again. But what impressed me was, without any thought, I had done something to protect myself. And then my brain, I could see it, you know, becoming rational, looking, deciding, and then telling me it's okay. But in a split second, I was doing something to protect myself. So that's what fear is about. You see something, you think it's a snake, a mad dog, you move fast. But if you live in that, your immune function is down. Your stress hormone levels are up. The blood is going to muscles and the parts of your brain that get you to move quickly. And it is not about healing and growth and repair. It's about protecting. So if you stay in that state, you actually become more vulnerable to disease. And that's why I say to people, confront your fears. And I mean that literally. Look at it. Describe it. What is it you're afraid of? Because I find when people dissect their fears, you begin to realize, oh, I could do something about this or that. Or, you know, it's like saying, oh, I'm afraid of dying. Well, what does that mean? I mean, you know, I can't stop you from dying someday. But if you said, well, pain, or I'm alone, or, I'm, you know, then, okay, let's make sure we have something for your pain.
You say use depression and pain to our benefit. How do we use depression and pain to our benefit?
Okay. What do you do when you're hungry?
Eat.
Right. You go to find nourishment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you have to do if you're feeling fear, pain, depression. You have to say to yourself, what does my life need? What nourishment do I have to bring into my life so I don't experience this kind of symptom again? See, if you're surrounded by loved ones, the amount of pain you have is a fraction of that if you're sitting alone. And I always say to people, you don't believe me? Put your hand in a bucket of ice sitting alone in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Then come out and put your family around you. Do the same thing. Watch how much longer you can keep it in.
Well, my great-grandmother always used to say, a trouble shared is a trouble halved. I mean,
that's
a really,
right.
really old saying, but it's very true.
And so, again, it's seeking to change your life. Use it as a labor pain rather than, oh, I'm depressed. It's no good for my immune system. I'm in fear. Wait a minute. What do we need to change to make this a healthier, happier, more comfortable life for you? And then you begin to say, the curse became a blessing because look what happened, what I felt, what I was experiencing emotionally. So I changed my life and, hey, look at this. You know, so I see people literally, you know, oh, I could die. Well, I want to go to Colorado. I want to buy a house in Florida. I'm closing my law office. I want to play my violin. So it gives them permission. And those are the people, as I say, who instead of being dead in a few months are playing a violin in an orchestra a year later and answering the telephone when I call up to find out how come I wasn't invited to the funeral, the person who's supposed to be dead answers the phone.
Because they focused on living.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the healing power of animals. I know you've talked about this a lot, and you share a story in the book of a vet whose throat cancer taught him things he said about pets that he'd never learned in school. I wonder if you'd share some of that with us.
Well, what popped into my head immediately, I don't remember if I put it in the book, was a four-year-old was asked by a veterinarian who was about to euthanize his dog, why do you think animals have shorter lives? And the boy said, oh, I know. You know, and all the adults in the room are like, huh? And he said, because they know about love and forgiveness and don't need all the time it takes us to learn.
True.
And believe me, I did a lot of children's surgery. The kids were always my teachers. Well, I mean, this is from one of our children when he was 7, and I thought he had a malignancy that he was going to die of in a year when all I had is an x-ray showing a tumor. And he said to me, Dad, you're handling this poorly. You know, that we want to go out and play and enjoy the day, and you want us all depressed in our room. We have 5 children. You know, I'm trying to tell them all what's going to happen to their brother.
Right.
And I think the animals instinctively know this, you know, that they're living in the moment. They don't judge, their value by their body. This is a quote from a veterinarian. I mean, from a veterinarian who had cancer and was about to have a mastectomy. And she said, you know, she couldn't sleep all night before surgery. And then she remembered the animal and immediately was okay. She said, I amputate legs, jaws, all kinds of parts. They wake up, they lick their owner's faces. They know they're here to love and be loved and teach us a few things.
And where would we be without them?
Yeah, and I have to add, see, the chemistry is also meaningful. If you pet a dog, your oxytocin and serotonin levels go up. Those are bonding hormones. If you have a heart attack, go home to a house with a dog, study from Australia. 5% of the people were dead 12 months later. You didn't have a dog, 26% were dead. So again, it's about relationships and connection. They teach us that. And as I say, they teach us to not look in the mirror and judge ourselves, but to just go out and enjoy the day.
Well, that's good advice. And there are some great stories in here. They are inspiring. Sometimes when you read stuff like this, it can be very upsetting, but I did find these stories inspiring. I wonder what you'd like to leave our listeners with. If somebody is suffering today.
The thought that popped into my head was, I don't think I or these stories have anything new to say. Now, what do I mean by that? It's part of why I have my reflection. I think these messages are age old. So whether it's Buddha, Bible, Talmud, other religions, they're teaching us how do you survive? How do you make your life meaningful? How do you save your life rather than losing your true self and your true life? And so, again, these are practical, modern stories that everybody can read and say, okay, that, I can put that into my life today rather than reading some myth or fairy tale or parable and saying, I wonder what they're talking about.
Mm.
So read it and learn. Because, again, I always say to people, maybe this is the best message, look for common themes from survivors, whether it's addictions, saying fake it till you make it, whether it's kids with cancer, whether it's, United States Marines. If they said, these are the things that helped me survive difficult times, listen. And when you hear a common theme, say, okay, that must work. I'm going to put that in my life. So
take
it till you make it. Act as if you're the person you want to be, and wonderful things can happen.
There you go. I really appreciate you being with us today, Dr. Burney.
Thank you.
And want to let listeners know that you can find more information at Dr. Burney Siegel's website, which is BurneySiegelMD.com, BurneySiegelMD.com. And his new book is called Faith, Hope, and Healing, Inspiring Lessons Learned from People Living with Cancer. When we come back, we'll be joined by Energy Master Dr. Deborah Green. She's described as a bridge builder, someone who takes complex information about the unseen world and translates it into understandable forms. Stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Next week on Conversations Live, we explore how to create work you love in awakening artistry. Former Harvard lawyer Tama Cleaves teaches you, you can have it all. Her new book is This Time I Dance. Join us Monday, May 18th on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. For more details, see conversationslive.net.
Commune with the Pop Oracle on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Don't miss the Radio 8 Ball Show, Fridays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150. If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
Tell your friends, the place to be is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And we just talked with Dr. Burney Siegel about the power of the mind-body-spirit connection. And we're going to continue that conversation with Dr. Deborah Green, but lead it in a totally different direction. Dr. Deborah Green has dedicated her life to studying and mastering energy work as a teacher, a practitioner, and researcher. She's a prolific writer, has facilitated hundreds of workshops for major organizations. She's co-presented with cell biologist Dr. Bruce Lipton and been a frequent panelist on energy medicine topics. Dr. Green has had her own practice since 1993. She currently practices in Maui, where she lives, and in the Bay Area. Her new book is called Endless Energy, The Essential Guide to Energy Health. Dr. Deborah Green, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
What a pleasure to have you. Let's begin with this. Because so many people are exhausted today, and no matter what they do, they complain they can't seem to find that spark of that vital energy that they used to once have. You say that vitality is impacted by important factors. They have little to do with diet or exercise, and that other energies, known as energy bodies, have the strongest effect. You say energy comes from energy. Tell us what all that means.
All right, I will do my best. Well, the tendency is, if a person is feeling a little droopy, for us to, you know, pay attention to, oh, am I eating right? Am I getting enough sleep? Am I exercising? And so forth. But those factors, I don't mean to downplay them, but they don't tell us the whole story. And the fact is that our energy is impacted by other energies, and so we need to learn to pay attention to those energies. And I'm fond of quoting Nikola Tesla, who said, if you want to understand the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. And I would say, if we want to understand ourselves, if we want to understand our health, we need to think in terms of energy and frequency and vibration.
Now, you've written this new book, Endless Energy. Tell us a little bit about that and what makes it different from other books out there on energy.
Well, what I tried to do in the book was to really tie together a lot of diverse, you know, information about energy, because there is a lot of, you know, a lot of books mm-hmm. and a lot of other sources for, you know, I mean, the energy health field is really up and coming right now. And so we hear terms, you know, aura, chakra, etheric body. We, you know, hear about all these things, but most of us don't know how it all fits together. And we also don't know how we can use the information in our day-to-day, moment-to-moment lives. And so the book is to tie together all of these concepts into a seamless package, and also to give really practical tools and exercises that people can use to really help themselves.
And you make a great point there about tying it all together, because that's very true. Because, you know, we probably have listeners there who could run circles around me on all this stuff. It, you know, it's not my main topic at all. But you have diagrams in the book that did tie it all together. And I'm a very visual person, and it really helped me understand, okay, this is what people are talking about now.
Nice.
Let's talk about energy constitution. You say that energy constitution consists of four bodies which work together: the vital energy, emotional, mental, and universal. Overall vitality is our get up and go energy, right?
Yes, exactly. The vitality comes to us from our vital body. And just to give a little background of that, right around the late 1950s, early 1960s, a Nobel Prize-winning biophysicist named A.V. Hill, he was looking into the energy that's necessary to fire a muscle. And, you know, most of us understand that the energy necessary to fire a muscle comes from this biochemical interaction between ATP and the cell's mitochondria. And Dr. Hill was looking into that, and he discovered something missing. He discovered that only approximately 60% of the energy necessary to fire a muscle came from that ATP cell mitochondria interaction. And he was baffled by this, and he continued to look into it more and more, and eventually published a series of papers referring to this as the unaccounted for energy, and calling upon his colleagues to please help solve the mystery. Well, the mystery has been solved, but most of us don't know about it. In 1995, the National Institutes of Health formally recognized the existence of the biofield, and that is a non-physical, meaning non-Hertzian, energy that permeates and surrounds the human body. And it's that energy, which I refer to as the vital body, that gives us our vitality, our get up and go, you know, energizes us, it animates us, brings us to life. And that vital body happens to be very susceptible to other kinds of energies.
Now, I was just going to say that the vital energy is dependent on the other energies. You say if we change one of the energies, we change them all. Now, I'm assuming if we can change them for the better, we can also change them for the worse, right? If we change them, we don't want to do that, obviously.
But, yes.
But that's how they interconnect.
Yes. It does work that way. And there's a few really fascinating things about the vital body. One is that, which we've talked about, it's an interface, which means it interfaces between our dense physical body and our other energy bodies, our emotional body, our mental body, and our universal body. And so because it's an interface, then by tapping into that vital body, you can affect things on the other levels and vice versa.
So let's look at how we protect our vital body, because we need to protect that in order for all of everything else to come together.
Well, it's true. The vital body is extremely susceptible, as I said, to other energies. And one of the big ones that it's very susceptible to is radiation, specifically electromagnetic radiation. And, you know, we live in a wireless age. You know, more and more technologies are coming out, wireless technologies. We have Wi-Fi, we have Bluetooth, we have cell phones, we have baby monitors, cordless phones. I mean, you know, all on and on and on it goes. And we need to pay attention to the impact of those wireless technologies, many of which operate in the microwave frequency range, because they do have a significant impact on the vital body.
Now, one of them I was interested to see, you have a list here of, it's a test to see what your energy level
yes.
is at. And one of the things that you have to check off is yes or no to most of my clothing is made of polyester, spandex, or nylon. That too has a frequency?
Yes, but the importance of those kinds of synthetic fabrics in terms of our energy health is that those fabrics actually block energy.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So if you're, I mean, of course, it doesn't hurt if you wear it every once in a while or you have a few articles of, you know, clothing like that. But if that's pretty much your predominant wardrobe, are those types of synthetics, it blocks the vitality. It blocks the subtle energy in the vital body. And it's not a good thing. So the energy is able to move more if you're wearing clothing that is coming from a living source, such as living plants or animals, you know, cottons and wool and so forth, linen, rayons, silk. Those are much more healthy for your vital body.
Interesting. You say because we sleep, you know, typically most people about 5 hours these days. But since we sleep for a long period of time, the bedroom especially is one of the places that we need to make sure is electromagnetic free.
That's true. Because we do spend, you know, hopefully more than 5 hours, by the way, because
really.
That also impacts our vitality, lack of sleep. But, you know, on average, maybe 7 hours a night are spent sleeping. And if you are sleeping, you know, with electronics around you, some people even sleep with their cell phones on, you know, in bed with them. It's really not a good idea. There's two aspects to pay attention to when it comes to the radiation. One is the electromagnetic radiation that's produced by anything that runs on electricity, whether it's a battery or you plug it into the wall. And the second radiation factor is the radio frequency radiation. And that's, you know, the information channel that a lot of wireless technologies utilize that allow us to talk and text message and send information. And so a cell phone is basically a double whammy, because you're getting the radio frequency radiation plus the electromagnetic radiation. And it's really not a good idea to sleep with that. And electromagnetic radiation decreases with distance, and so creating this 3-foot safety zone is really helpful at night when you're sleeping and also at work, which is the other place that most people spend a lot of time.
Oh, so to all my colleagues listening who can't get hold of me because my cell phone's turned off.
That's right.
This is why.
Hopefully you have your primary phone as a good old-fashioned landline, and the cell phone should be like a backup or secondary phone that you use to sort of turn it on and collect your voicemails or your email and then turn it back off again. Mm. At least that's my suggestion.
You say in the book, I'm going to read from it, energy, not energy, but energy, I-N-E-R-G-Y. Energy depleted foods undernourish your vital body in two ways. Tell us what energy means and what energy depleted foods are.
Okay. Yes, I use this term energy, as you said, with an I-N-E-R-G-Y, because energy, for our purposes of energy health, energy is not discrete. It's always intimately coupled with information. And so that's why I chose the term energy, to get that information aspect in there. Because it's not just energy that's, you know, energy like force and doing work. It's energy and information. So when I talk about information with energy, I mean that our energy is responsive and it's ready, willing, and able to be interacted with. And it's highly responsive to us. So, and the other thing about energy with the I-N is that it's accessed internally inside of us. So it's kind of an inside-out way of understanding our health and ourselves. So when I talk about energy-depleted foods, a lot of our food gets killed. You know, it's, I don't mean animals. I mean dead. The food is deadened by the heavy processing that it undergoes. And if you think about it, I mean, we as human beings have a vital body that animates us and brings us to life and energizes us. Well, so do plants and animals. Any living thing has this vital body component to it. But when you heavily process the food, you basically remove any of that life force whatsoever, any of that vitality, and then you're essentially eating dead food, and eating dead foods can actually rob energy from our system.
Okay, well, we're talking today with Dr. Deborah Green, and her new book is called Endless Energy, The Essential Guide to Energy Health. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue. I want to talk about emotional energy, which is, according to Dr. Green, one of the most neglected energy bodies. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
If you like to read fiction, check out Book Talk Podcast Reviews, brought to you weekly by Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Go to conversationslive.net and click on the menu at Book Talk to hear reviews of an eclectic range of books. We review fiction from chick lit and mystery to suspense and literary, from new to old, overlooked and forgotten. Check out Book Talk Podcast today at conversationslive.net. If you'd like to suggest a book for review, email info@conversationslive.net or call 206-414-6159.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Spread the word. You don't have to settle for the usual talk radio. Now there's Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Deborah Green. She's dedicated her life to studying and mastering energy work. And we're talking today about some of the work that she's discussed in her new book, Endless Energy, The Essential Guide to Energy Health. So I wanted to continue the conversation, Deborah, with looking at the four energy bodies. We just covered the vital body. Let's look at the one you say is the most neglected, and that's the emotional body.
Yes, the emotional body ends up being highly neglected because, you know, most of us pay attention to, you know, what's going on with us mentally, and we pay attention to our physical. And by paying attention to the physical, we're in a way attending to our vital energy because the vital body and the physical body interface with each other. But the emotional body, yes, it's kind of neglected. And, you know, when something goes wrong with us emotionally, we oftentimes don't know what to do about it or how to deal with those messy emotions, you know. When we're feeling fine, of course, no problem. But if we get upset, if we go into fear or anxiety or, you know, feel depressed or anger, then it becomes problematic, and we oftentimes don't know what to do. So that body ends up getting pretty neglected.
How do we protect our emotional body? By obviously acknowledging our feelings, our emotions, and...
Well, it's true. Because of emotional body neglect, the emotional body is prone to being unhealthy. And when it's unhealthy, one of two things happens. It either morphs into what I call the overweight condition, where the emotional body just becomes very large in form, or the opposite can happen, where the emotional body gets very emaciated and, you know, undernourished and underweight. And of course, I mean, I'm speaking metaphorically because the emotional body is an energy body, so it doesn't really have weight to it. But if we could see these energies, we would be able to see that the emotional body is either extremely large or very, 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 very small. And that usually happens because we don't know how to deal with our feelings, and so we either end up suppressing them, which causes this undernourished, underweight condition, or we end up overindulging them, and that's how we end up with the overweight condition. So I guess to answer your question, the best way to work with the emotional body is to be aware of what we're feeling as close to in the moment when the feelings are very subtle and small, and then to work with them in some way. And there are many ways to work with emotions, but it's not about suppression or overindulgence.
Well, give me an example of somebody that you've worked with, maybe, you know, give me an example of some of the ways or a couple of the ways.
To work with the emotional body?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one of the, and again, it depends if it's an underweight or overweight condition, mm-hmm. but I mean, let's just talk about an overweight condition. I mean, first of all, just being aware that that's going on is a huge help, you know, and there are certain emotional body junk foods that we need to pay attention to. And there are certain feeling states that the overweight body gets addicted to. And so just being educated and knowing about those is very, very helpful. And then if you find yourself overindulging in those particular emotions, there are things that you can do to change the energy. One of them is a tapping exercise that I describe in the book. And another one is what I call an energy reversal. And that is, you know, let's say I have an overweight emotional body, which, in fact, most of the time I do. As a matter of fact, I confess to everyone, much of the information in that chapter of the book came right out of my own experience with my large, honking, huge, obese emotional body. And one of the...
She's not talking physically because she's really quite slender.
Which is actually a good point, Vicky, because there is no correlation between our physical body and our energy bodies in terms of size and shape and so forth. There's not a correlation between the emotional body and the physical. There is a correlation between the vital body and the physical, but not the emotional. So anyway, the energy reversal works in such a way that if there's a particular emotion that you've become addicted to, in order to help wean yourself off of it, when that emotional impulse arises in you, you can then do a reversal, and you actually act as if the opposite thing is happening. And it's a little complex for me to go into detail mm-hmm. about, but that's it in a nutshell.
Okay.
So you're reversing the energy of that impulse, but you're not disrupting the information channel.
Okay. Now, mental energy is the third energy body. And I'm going to confess, I got a little lost when I was reading this. Some of the concepts I found a little difficult to absorb because, uh-huh. you know, I didn't have time to go back and reread. So I wonder if you'd share with us, what do we need to know about the mental energy body?
The most important thing to know about the mental body is that thoughts are things. Thoughts are things. If we could see them, they have size, shape, form, and they have color. And thoughts have particular behaviors. They behave in predictable ways depending upon the quality of the thought form. And thoughts act as magnets from the perspective of energies. So if you are, you know, thinking thoughts that are low frequency, you are magnetizing low frequency thought forms and therefore experiences into your life. And of course, if you're thinking high frequency thought forms, then you help to magnetize those kinds of thought forms and experiences into your life. That's it in a nutshell.
So it's really like what we commonly call the law of attraction, but
yes,
more scientific, and there's scientific measurement to it.
Yes,
frequency measurement.
And helps us to understand how come the law of attraction sometimes works and sometimes it doesn't.
Oh, interesting.
And that has to do with the quality of your mental body and your power of concentration. Concentration is very necessary if you want to manifest. And I explain a little bit about how that works in that chapter.
Okay. And then the last one is universal energy. And you say the universal body occupies the highest frequency range of the energy, I-N, energy continuum.
Yes.
Yeah, explain that to us.
Well, the continuum ranges from the lowest or slowest vibratory frequency, which is the dense physical, all the way up to the ultra-high frequency range of the universal body. And it is a continuum, of course, with the vital, emotional, and mental bodies in between. So the universal body has its own qualities and its own properties. And just as feelings are the substance of the emotional body and the substance of the mental body is thoughts, the substance of the universal body is consciousness. And consciousness is a very high frequency energy in and of itself, and it has special properties to it, healing qualities being one of them.
You talk about the four important qualities. You just said one of them. What are the other three?
That consciousness is basically mobile.
Mm-hmm.
It can travel anywhere. It is limitless to the best of our ability. Consciousness has no limitations, no known limitations to it. And it is infinite. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed. Therefore, we all have this infinite aspect to us.
So we're almost at the end of our show. I want to let listeners know that you're coming up to talk here in the Seattle area. But I want to first of all get in the question, how do we get to the point of having endless energy? Because we all want endless energy.
Well, of course, the quick answer is read the book.
Read the book.
But that's not really very fair, is it? I mean, if I had to sum it up, I would say that energy comes from energy. And if you want to have endless energy, you need to pay attention to what is going on inside you, take an inside-out approach, and pay attention to the energy qualities of what you have inside and what you come in contact with.
Okay, sounds good. Well, I appreciate you being with us today, and nice to have you here in the studio with me, because we talk to people from all over the place, so it's actually nice to have a live body speaking with me right here. And let's let our listeners know when you're coming up to speak. You are at East West Bookshop, according to my information, on Tuesday. That's tomorrow?
Yes.
At 7 to 8:30 p.m. Dr. Green is at East West Bookshop. And she's also at Village Books on Friday, this coming Friday, the 15th at 7 p.m. And for listeners up in Vancouver, because I know we have them, she's at Banyan Books on Tuesday, the 19th. At 6:30.
Yes. Yeah. And may I mention my website?
Yes, please do.
www.energyhealthy.com.
And one more time.
Energyhealthy.com.
Energyhealthy.com. And you can also Google Deborah Green with an E, PhD, and she pops right up. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And again, Dr. Green's book, Endless Energy, The Essential Guide to Energy Health. If you missed any of that, you can catch it up on our website. It will be Podcast will be up there tomorrow. And I want to thank everyone for joining us today. If you've got questions or feedback, comments on today's show, you can reach me at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. If you prefer to leave just a voicemail, we've got a special box just for you. It's 206-414-6159. That's 206-414-6159. Or you can email me, info@conversationslive.net. I appreciate you for spending this hour with us. We'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong, and thanks for being with us.
Next week on Conversations Live, we explore how to create work you love in awakening artistry. Former Harvard lawyer Tama Cleaves teaches you, you can have it all. Her new book is This Time I Dance. Join us Monday, May 18th on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. For more details, see conversationslive.net.